or Death Holler brought us Season 3 Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. Now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head, that seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host, Law Urena. Urena, do you think this sealed-off apartment building with a crazy screaming is safe for us to enter?
Yeah, why not? It's better than being outside.
Is it, though?
I mean, I don't know, because, you know, that's so funny, because we're going to get into what we're talking about, but I really feel like I could find a safe place in this place. Like, I don't feel like these people applied themselves.
You could find a safe place for a little while, and then you'd probably get killed by something else.
Maybe, but like, I feel like you can defend yourself. I don't know. Let's get into it.
All right, here it is, folks. The most widely known found footage zombie movie of them all, taking the concept of a lone cameraman and female interviewer and following them into the pit of hell. This is the film that showed how scary a zombie outbreak can be in person, or as close to such a thing as we hopefully will ever get. So grab whatever makeshift weapon you can find, keep those flashlights on at all time, because they don't like the light, and whatever you do, don't get bit, as we cover Wreck and its American remake, Quarantine. But first, if you're enjoying the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take the time to like, comment, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show. Wreck from 2007, tagline, one witness, one camera.
That doesn't go, because one camera, yes, but one witness, no. There was multiple witnesses. Maybe only one but alive witness?
One left.
Yeah, okay.
Spoiler alert. And you're going to have to do these names for me. I have idea how to pronounce these.
Okay.
Directed by...
Oh, God. Juame Balaguero? Juame? I've never heard that name before.
Yeah, I didn't even know how to start that in Paco Plaza.
You can there do that one. There you go. One. Very good.
Also written by Juame.
Juame Balaguero. Balaguero.
Yep.
Oh, Balaguero.
Luiso Badero. Paco Plaza again.
You did it.
There is no music in this, which really? Is nice, because there shouldn't be.
Wait. Are you
There's
sure?
There's one song at the credits that plays when Wreck is displayed at the very end of the movie, and that's it.
The reason why I ask is because, as I previously mentioned, your girl watched this entirely in Spanish with only Spanish subtitles, but there was a couple of moments where they said music was playing. They're like, música, música. And I don't know if they were saying the music or if there was actual music. I couldn't hear anything, so.
So I don't know in this one, but in Wreck Part 2, a record player plays, and it's very creepy, but it has nothing to do, but that's all. Yeah, that, it's not like, it's not a soundtrack.
I didn't know, you know? If what I was listening for was, I was almost listening for like a music box to see if that's what they were saying, but
yeah,
I can't remember because I was trying to translate, and I'm a little delayed with that because I'm a Nosabo kid.
Well, be in my position and try to keep up with what's going on screen while reading the English yes. subtitles. And then, like, it's destroying the atmosphere. Why? Why is this the case? And I didn't have that problem with Part 2. I don't know why it is with Part 2. I did not have an issue with that. It's like, I think because, like, it's a little bit more laid back as far as the camera movement. So yes. It's not like, I mean, there wasn't shaky cam that was distracting me from both reading and trying to figure out what was going on.
There's also a lot of screaming going on, and it was really hard for me. I couldn't read the subtitles while the screaming was happening because there was talking happening. I was like, okay, I just need to listen and translate because at this point the reading isn't gonna, I can't read, listen, and try to translate at the same time. I had to limit it to two functions.
I mean, I'm, you know, genuinely impressed. I mean, that you did what you did anyways. Like I said, here I am with English sometimes.
I keep telling my white friends that I understand Spanish a lot, just not entirely. And I'm not confident speaking because even though it was allegedly a first language of mine, I don't remember those years at all. And my parents were like, no, we don't want her speaking Spanish. She's going to be made fun of. And now look at me. Look at me now. I sound like a white Mexican. No one thinks I'm Mexican. And I'm a Nosabo kid.
And here's a question I have for you. It's kind of a tangent. Mm-hmm. If you, since this is actually Spain Spanish, mm-hmm. is there a difference? I mean,
oh, big time. Big time.
They always told us in school that there was, but I just wanted to, check that.
To be racist, I'm going to say it right now, racista. To be racist, the Spain Spanish is proper Spanish. And Mexico Spanish it's Spanish, but it's ghetto. It's like the ghetto Spanish. And then there's, I forget what the slang term is for it, where it's like, it's how my dad speaks Spanish. It's like when you say something partially in Spanish. I'll give you a sentence. Vas a la tienda y cómprame some milk. So you say it partly in Spanish and then you say the rest in English because you don't know that word. Obviously, I know what milk is, but you just say something completely.
Wasn't there a movie with Adam Sandler called Spanglish that was kind of what you're talking about?
And maybe that's what the word is, Spanglish.
Is that something different?
No, I think that's right. I mean, I haven't seen that movie, but Spanglish would be a very good definition of speaking part Spanish and part English, obviously. And it is different, and I am learning Spain Spanish, so I am learning proper Spanish. But it's hard because I already know the words in Mexican Spanish for some of these things. And I'm like, that's wrong. That's not how you say that. That's not how you say that, you know? Basically, I cannot take the Spanish to Mexico. I will be killed.
First of all, it sounds like it's the difference between proper, jolly old English in Britain, mm-hmm. Especially versus Appalachian English,
the 100%. Complete
other side of it. but there's, I mean, outside the slang, you can kind of figure out what's going on. But the other thing is, too, I just found it funny because, like, the word, there's one word that means, like, three or four different things in this movie. Like, I know vominos, it mm-hmm. means move, run, you know. Yeah. But the context in the English, at least at the bottom, sometimes he would say, run, fuckers. And he wouldn't say, he was just saying vominos, but that's what they put.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's the same fucking, it's just one word. It means run. Like, why, you know, it's just that, and I guess that's the reason English is so hard for other people to learn is because we have, like, there's no you don't have to worry necessarily about the context as much. It's like, oh, we got 15 different words to imply context, so learn all those and then you can figure it out.
Spanish in English is very confusing because you have words like como, that means how, or as, or when. Not when, because yes, sometimes there's like four different meanings for the word como. So it could also mean I eat, like. It could mean like or for, as much as. There's so many different things you can use como for that it's fucking ridiculous. So Spanish is not an easy language, and people say it's easier than English, and maybe that is easier said than done for some people. I am Hispanic studying Spanish, and it's not. I think English is way less complicated.
I get that and sorry for the tangent, folks, but I get that in the, you know, like the details and the weeds of it, English is like way more complicated and stupid because for every rule, there's 15 exceptions because it's patched together from like German, Italian, yeah. You know, some Spanish, you know, all Irish, you know, all kinds of other things. But I don't know, when you're speaking English and you go to another language, you appreciate in English mm-hmm. that there's so much variance for things that the only thing that impresses me, in a roundabout sense is the way Germans take their language and they'll have a word that means a concept that's like very singular and it's very specific and it's very weird. It's just like Schadenfreude, you know, finding pleasure in others' pain. It's like, why do you have a word for that? Why is that? And their language has a shit ton of that. Like, it's all over their language. And it's like, that's weird, guys. That you're like defining one specific thing that is so niche that shouldn't have a word, but it does. But anyway,
I have to say, because you're talking German and my husband can say words in German. He does not speak German. And he doesn't know this, but we were talking about this at work that Krankenwagen means ambulance. In German, yes. But Krankenhaus means hospital. Kranken. Like, it's Kranken. Like, who? It's like, sounds cranky. And, of course, Germans sound cranky in general. But Krankenwagen. Krankenwagen.
Sounds like a crack house in Appalachian.
Oh, my God.
Those are not hospitals. Don't go there.
Listen to me. Listen for a second. When you're talking about me and you watching a Spanish, and it's not fair, I have an advantage. I grew up around Spanish, and I understand a good majority of it. At least 50% of it is what I understand, if not more. But I'm not going to learn Spanish watching these people on TV do this. Like, you just kind of have to understand what's going on, and I think you had a good idea. The actors were great. I think they portrayed what was happening, that you can have a good idea without understanding the words entirely. However, the actress from, what is that film we just reviewed where she learned to speak English just by listening to people talk?
Life Force.
Yeah. Yes, that has been out already. She was able to learn English just by listening to people have conversations. So that to me, that's the difference between how easy Spanish is versus English, in my opinion.
Well, I'm glad that our listeners who have probably dozed off this point have had an education in this, but it's just, and when you're going to like foreign speaking movies, you've got to at least have a little bit of dialogue about it.
Exactly. Or the actors have to do a really good job.
Oh yeah, they do. And I'll get into the reason why it's actually very smart what they did with that. But yeah. Made for a budget of $2 million, it made $23 million worldwide.
Hell,
that's a good turnaround.
That's a real good turnaround.
Principal players, Manuela Velasco. I know it's not Angela, but Angela, or however they say it, Vidal.
Yeah, Angela.
It's Angela. Anyways, Puff Piece news reporter. She's got a show called The Night Shift, or actually, no, it's not in this one. It's called While You Were Sleeping, because they make a joke about it.
Okay.
She was actually to my knowledge, she was I think that's in the trivia, she was actually a real TV interviewer. Okay. They just got her to do her real job for this movie.
That it works. But
to make it more authentic.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because when I saw, oh, but this is Spain, this is not Mexico. Oh my God, no, that makes so much more sense now. I was like, where are the big tittied, big ass fucking news reporters? Because that's all that Mexico has. And I mean, can you blame them? They're smart. People love watching the nightly news because of that.
Yeah, Cody showed me there was a meme that had a difference between France weather woman and Mexican weather woman. And let's just say the badonkadonk and the boobies were way bigger in Mexico.
Oh, my God.
Manuela is, I mean, she's been in several things since then, but as far as like horror movies go, she was in Rec 2.
Spoiler alert.
Which we will cover. Yep. And in Rec 4 Apocalypse, because it directly follows Rec 2.
Okay.
It's just not a found footage movie.
Interesting. Wait, but so Rec 3, I take it that they just skipped that one altogether. Noah said Rec 4 is hella good.
Rec 3 is called Genesis, and it takes place before the apartment building. Oh,
okay, that makes sense. Okay, I like that.
Pablo Rosso plays Pablo, the cameraman. Imagine that, his real name. He actually is a cameraman, so that makes sense that they'd have him doing that job. He was in Rec 2,
what?
Rec 3.
What?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
Rec 3, Genesis. He was the director of photography in that movie. And then Rec 4, Apocalypse, he was the director of photography. So that he was actually the one, you know, in those movies, since they're not found footage, he was the one actually directing the camera shots, which makes sense since that's what he does.
So he wasn't as an actor. He just was in the production.
Yes. He made sure that the camera was where it needed to be at.
So is he like a cameraman in real life?
Yeah.
Well, technically now, but I mean, like, was he prior to the movie?
I think so. I think he was the person that was hired to be the cameraman for these movies.
That's,
I mean, that was his job.
Pretty good. I mean, look it, we just recorded Savage Land, or we just released Savage Land, excuse me. And it was genius that they had a photographer that they used as the cameraman. I think Hispanics know what they're doing. When they're hiring, like, because you know that they're saving money by hiring these people, and these people think they've hit the jackpot, but they do their job so well.
Yeah, they're getting the person for two different things inside the movie. Actor and, you know, photographer, you know, whatever they are, taking the pictures / you know, filming the movie, and they're, you know, probably, I don't know if they get double paid. There's probably some union thing that they have to get some pay on the back end for
in
the
Mexico
other role.
Or
but
Spain, maybe Spain, but not Mexico.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but Savage Land was in America. So, true. I mean, I don't know how much, you know, that figured in. We have Farron Terraza playing Manu, or however you say that. Firefighter assigned to the show crew. He was in Rec 2, Rec 3 Genesis, and then Rec 4 Apocalypse.
Spoiler alert. So many spoiler alerts.
Yeah. David Vert plays Alex, the other firefighter assigned to the crew. Spoiler alert for him, he's the one that takes a nosedive off of a short balcony. So there you go. he pops up again in Rec 2. For specific reasons.
Interesting.
Yamam Serrano.
Yamam, hell yeah.
Yamama plays Policia Joven, which I think translated on Google to young
police officer.
Policeman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's an older police officer, and he's like the younger of the two. But he's the asshole. He's like the one that is like, you know, waving the gun around and like, you know, telling people to calm down and all that. He's the jerk in this movie. And he's also in Rec 2.
He's inexperienced.
Well, he gets some experience in this movie and in the second one. Carlos Vincenti, however you say that, medical intern.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting about him is like, he's basically worthless because he doesn't know shit, and but I mean, it makes sense. Why would you randomly have, like, I mean, quarantine makes it work, but it's convenient to have somebody in the apartment that's a doctor, you know, of some kind.
Oh, 100%.
So having him a medical intern that doesn't really know what he's doing, that makes more sense to me than just like, of course I'm a doctor. You know, it's like, yeah, you are, sure.
But see, a medical intern, in my opinion, like you would be surprised, and I don't know how it works out in your area and your parts, but like our medics and our EMTs have to have a lot of fucking medical knowledge. I call them rogue doctors for a reason. So you would think a medical intern would have more than that.
Well, I'm not saying that they wouldn't, but the thing is that they're basically there to do diagnostic testing. That's what you know what. So they, and he even mentions it in like his quote, I think, for the movie. He does blood pressure checks, temperatures. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he can get that sort of thing, but he has not been taught how to diagnose yet, which is the main issue. It's like, what's wrong with these people? I don't know because I don't diagnose.
Okay.
I mean, and then we have, and there's a lot of people in this movie. I'm trying to cut it short for both of them. Claudia Silva plays Jennifer, or Yennefer, however they would say it, young girl who was infected prior to the lockdown.
Jennifer Lopez.
Jennifer. She likes tacos and burritos. she is in Rec 2. Spoiler alert.
Jesus, fuck. Jesus Cristo.
Synopsis. Angela Vidal, I'm just going to use her English name, and her cameraman, Pablo, decide to follow around a couple of firefighters for a late night show while you were sleeping. Mm-hmm. What seems to be a routine call for assistance quickly turns into a living hell as an infected old woman savagely attacks the first responders on scene. When everyone is sealed inside with orders not to leave the building, things begin falling apart. Unlike some cameramen, Pablo actually steps in to help.
Yep.
Manu bravely leads those who are left, and Angela is determined that the public knows what transpired. Whatever you witness, never stop recording.
I like
that's it. That's one of the taglines.
Yep.
Some other ones, just one witness, a video camera. Experience fear. That could be any damn movie. This one obviously came out later whenever Quarantine made its debut a year after, the movie that inspired Quarantine.
It's not a lie.
It's really, it's rote for rote, the same damn movie. And then Trapped, No Mercy, No Escape, No One Gets Out Alive.
Okay, this is a little TLDR, but it actually works.
Yeah, I mean, it explains what's going on in the movie pretty well.
I'm that's the first TLDR that I approve.
a couple of quotes here. Alex, one of the firefighters, what's your show called? And then Angela's like, while you were asleep. And then Manu's like, while you were asleep, then who watches it? And then they all laugh. And then finally, the last line in the movie from Angela, we have to tape everything, Pablo, for fuck's sake. And then cut to the darkness. Rick pops up and you hear some wild rock music going on, and that's your movie. So there you go.
The only music in the film, allegedly.
It's there's no soundtrack. I'll put it that way. There is no soundtrack. That sells the reality of this movie more than anything else. We talked about this with Diary of the Dead, him putting in music and all that stuff, even though he explained it as the girlfriend editing it. It ruins the realism of it to a certain degree. When you're watching this, you're just hearing the screams, the helicopter sounds, whatever's going on.
Yeah.
Basically. Visually, I think they do a pretty damn good job, especially, I mean, I know they had a budget of $2 million, which is a lot, but those bites and the blood.
Oh,
and
yeah. Gore,
those look fucking nasty. I mean, they're good. Now Quarantine went a little above and beyond with the visuals to make it more zombie-like.
Yes.
But, this one I think sells like just a basic virus until the end of the movie. When you get that woman that walks through there in the night vision goggles, now that is a witch from hell. And I don't know how you survived that, because when I saw that, I'm like, this is the kind of shit that really disturb you right now.
you know what it reminded me of is a film that we reviewed already. Can you remember?
Put
at the top.
Give me a hint.
Justin Long was in it.
Oh, them big old milk titties. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Barbarian.
Barbarian. All right, I got you. Yeah, that's what I was thinking when I saw it. That was pretty horrific. What I liked, I don't so much want to get into it, but I think that how this movie and quarantine ended, or let me rephrase, what caused the viruses or what they thought caused the virus.
Yes.
Really fit the Mexican theme of the, excuse me, Spanish. Sorry, Spaniards. I am half Spanish. I can mix that up. But I think that it went very well with the Latino theme versus the American one.
This spoils the ending slightly, if you know what I'm talking about. I feel like this series leads into the world that we see in When Evil Lurks.
Wait, this what?
This movie leads into the world that we're into in that movie When Evil Lurks, the other zombie movie.
I was thinking
that you won't watch again.
Shut up, I hate you. I think you're right, but will I feel that way more when I see Wreck 2?
1,000% you'll feel that way. Okay. I mean, it goes way in that direction.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say before you watch it.
Okay, perfect. Because I know that Noah wants to watch it again. So, yeah.
The other thing visually about the movie, it is filmed on a, regular, I don't know if they use multiple cameras, but it seems like it was like they did a lot of like one take type things or whatever, where they had the one camera recording things. And that also sells the reality of the movie, especially the scene that stands out in both of them for me is the scene where the cameraman has to get up on a table outside of the room while the CDC guys or whatever the, Spanish equivalent is in there checking out the bodies, and he can't really hear them, but he can see them from a distance with that camera kind of cocked, at an angle, while up above like a glass or whatever partition.
Yeah.
I feel like scenes like that sell the movie for me as far as like the realism of it. I think they did a good job with that. And this goes in the story a little bit. The fact that the cameraman intervenes when necessary to keep both himself and Angela protected.
Oh, 100% compared to what we've been witnessing.
My God, the difference between that and Diary of the Dead is 1,000% different. I was just like, thank you. This is what a real person would do in this situation, the only thing, it's rough when you go back and watch this versus quarantine in a sense, because especially if you're an English speaking, viewer, because quarantine allows you to absorb the visuals better because you're not having to read the subtitles. That's my only issue with the visuals is you can't pick them up as well when you're watching it if you don't know Spanish enough to be able to hear it and not have to read it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I just know more than I think that I know, and it doesn't bother me. But it never bothers Noah either when he's watching these.
I will say one thing, though. The end of the movie, the difference between this one and quarantine, the way that it was set up, I saw more details in this than I did in quarantine. It's a couple of reasons. A, because I like how this ended better than quarantine. And then B, I think they just did a better job of like showing like what was in that room in the penthouse, better in this movie versus the attic or whatever it was in quarantine. I feel like it was kind of a jumbled mess when you got to quarantine. You finally got up to the upstairs floor. That's kind of spoiling that discussion. But, I mean, they're the same movie, so we're going to have to compare them.
Let's just stop being worried about that. Look it. I'm going to say it right now. We are 28 minutes, almost 29 minutes into this. If you don't want to get spoiled on either movie and our thoughts, we're about to spoil it right now. So you need to bounce. You need to go watch these films, both of them. And then you need to come back, because I'll never review a film that I don't tell you guys to watch at this point. Actually, there might be a few where we say, maybe don't go watch this in a theater, but I don't think we'll ever say don't watch it, because I think it's unfair that we review a film and then we're like, ew, guys, don't do it. I don't think that's good at all.
There's very few films that you shouldn't watch, period. I mean, unless they're just, nasty for nasty's sake. I mean, there's some of those out there, but I mean, most movies deserve at least one view, and then you can make your opinion. It might be the best, I mean, because people have different tastes, so yes. I mean, that makes a world of difference.
And I don't think I need to reiterate, but I'm going to. I don't mind being told that I'm wrong. You ain't going to hurt my feelings. If anything, you might give me a perspective that I didn't understand before. So there's
I mean, I love hearing different views, too, because it might make me appreciate certain scenes. Like, I think we said this back in previous season. We covered Ghost Season. I did not, until I heard other people's discussion of The Shining and why the movie version is worth, you know, is why it's so praised, the multiple meanings and all that stuff. I hated that movie because I'm a Stephen King book fan, and it drastically altered the story so much that I could not stand it for the longest time. But I appreciated the movie after hearing other people's opinions on why the movie has its own merits. So there's always the option, you know, that always, you know, there's always things like that.
Yeah. So from this point on, we're going to spoil between Quarantine. And we cannot, I don't feel like I can keep discussing this film without comparing to Quarantine.
And vice versa, when I mean, technically, it's going to be shortened for both of them because we're going to have to, I mean, we can just roll into Quarantine right after this.
Exactly.
Because it even says in the trivia, it's a shot-for-shot remake. So, yes. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean,
realistically, the only thing you're going to get different is maybe five-ish minutes at the very end, because what causes the, or what, like I said, what they think is causing it is completely different. Now, it's still, at the end of the day, it's rabies. Let's just say it right now. It's rabies.
It's not in this movie.
It's an enzyme that's rabies-like, isn't it? Isn't it causing rabies? I'm generalizing.
No, it is not rabies at all in this. Rec 2 flips the script on this whole fucking thing. It is not
that's
rabies.
Rec 2. And you can spoil it for me. I don't care.
Rec 2 is the direct follow-up to this movie. Like, you could watch the two of them together. I discussed this off-air with you, and it makes one whole movie.
Okay.
At the end of this movie, the difference between this and Quarantine's ending is basically the bullshit that Americans have been doing since, you know, 9/11. It's terrorist, it's terrorist, it's terrorist. Somebody made super rabies in Quarantine, and they were planning on releasing it, and it got out, and there you go. This movie, a priest was the one that was doing all the shit up in the attic, and he took a girl who was possessed certifiably by the Vatican and took, like, blood from her and tried to isolate the part of her blood that was being demonically possessed or affected and tried to make an antidote to that. What he did was he fucked up and made it an airborne or basically a bloodborne virus.
Yes.
So now when you get bit, you become possessed by the same spirit that is possessing the creepy woman.
Wait,
so
but
that
isn't
woman,
it, but it's not a, okay, but in my opinion, it's not a possession. It's
no,
to me, it's an
enzyme. 100%. No, in Rec 2, it's possession.
Okay.
A priest comes in with these soldiers. He under the guise that he's just a regular member of the CDC or whatever their version is, and then reveals that he is a full man of the cloth, and he actually holds these things at bay by saying the Lord's Prayer and holding crucifixes to their heads. They are full on demons in this movie. They're just eight. Well, actually, they're all tied back to that main girl. The creepy woman in the attic is the original demon possessed child, and they're all part of her. Like,
okay.
They can even speak as her
in
part two.
So now they have basically, like, the every time I call it baby rabies, but it's basically, like, it's a possession, but it's also, like, a, why can't I word right now? Like, a parasite. Those almost like the weenie worms where they can all communicate.
It's funny you say that because,
don't tell me those fucking weenie worms.
There is a worm at the very end of the movie that's revealed in Rec 2.
Oh my god!
And it sets up part four.
Okay.
Is all I'm going to say on that.
So Rec 1, definitely a zombie film of rabies. They got the rabia.
It is not rabies in Rec. It is not.
It's rabies.
They at the end they set up that it's demonic. They set it up at the end of this movie.
I don't like it.
I love it because I think it made a better movie. When you watch part two, you'll see what I'm saying. I'm not one. You know that I hate demon possession movies. They're not my cup of tea. Yeah. But I think the way that they did this was brilliant because, and like, that's why I say that I think that it leads into When Evil Lurks, because that is a zombie virus that is demonic possession. So I think this, they could be part of the same world. And it's actually set in Spain too, which makes it perfect, you know?
Yeah. So I'm rethinking things right now because I was watching and I was translating that they had thought it was, I think what's throwing me off is that there was an enzyme that they were like, okay, this is the enzyme. And that's obviously what he took. And he obviously made it a super possession rabies of sorts.
He didn't intend to actually make it a weaponized virus. It was an accident.
I do understand that. But the enzyme, like I said, I'm sticking with that because that's why I was like, okay, well, this is kind of like rabies because I could totally see an enzyme causing.
And just so you know, it's not a worm that spreads. It's in the bite. It's still in the blood. Yes. It's still a zombie thing.
Enzymes are in the bite. So that's, you know.
I will spoil something for you in part two at the very end. Angela survives.
Which I gathered that.
she's the cause of part four, but here's the spoiler.
Okay.
She gets pulled away from the camera at the end of this.
Yes.
Disappears. That's the end of the movie.
Yes.
Part four reveals a scene after that where she crawls back. She's trying to crawl back to the camera. The weird lady stands over top of her, pukes up this maggot that's the size of her entire throat.
It burrows down
into her. And now she is the possessed. She doesn't have any of the symptoms of the possessed and she can seemingly control herself, but it's all a ruse so she can get the fuck out of that building so she can spread her plague. That's where the worm comes in at.
Oh my god.
It is
god.
A huge fucking maggot and it is gross as fuck because the actress who plays Angela swallows this thing. You can see it like going down her throat into her stomach.
Gross. It's bad. Okay, you know what? I'm gonna throw it out right now. I said that these endings were different, but technically they're not. Because think about it. In quarantine, spoiling quarantine, don't wanna fucking hear it. It was a quotation mark cult that got a hold of the virus that they were trying to release. Am I?
Yeah.
Okay.
They say something about a cult.
This
that.
Is
yeah,
a church
doomsday
that,
cult or
yes,
something
a doomsday
like that.
Cult. This is a church, which I'm going to throw it out there. I am Catholic. Culty. And granted, it was an accident, but they were still fucking around with something they shouldn't have been fucking around with.
Well, the explanation is that they really thought they could end possessions for all time by coming up with an antidote to them.
And the doomsday cult was trying to do it for bad.
Yeah, that's okay. The difference.
Okay, yeah. And yes, and I'll throw the slight difference there. Fucking around with things they shouldn't have been fucking around with, and they both found out.
Basically.
Basically, now, yeah.
I want to ask you one other thing that I can't remember from Wreck because I was paying attention to the subtitles more than watching the movie. Is there a scene in Wreck where somebody gets sniped from the window? Because I know in Wreck 2 there is, but I don't know if there was in Wreck 1.
Yes, there was. Well, no. I'm so
that's
wrong.
Quarantine. I know
quarantine
has that.
Fuck. Okay. I'm mixing them up. What happened, and it wasn't, I don't think, no, it wasn't next to a window. It was next to some kind of caged doorway or entryway, maybe. That was when one of the infected pulled a guy and fucked him up through one of the gated, I don't know, some kind of entryway, maybe.
That,
I don't think it was
that was the guy who was over the apartment or something like that, that said where he had something to do with that. He said he knew that where the landlord kept the keys, and then like he got, or no, actually no, it was the Now I remember what it was. It was the guy who was doing the blood work, who was from the outside. He was inside the room. He pulls the gate, tells him he's infected, locks it off, and then throws away the key. And then while the one guy's standing there that's telling them they need to go upstairs or they need to find the keys or whatever, he gets grabbed and bit. So that's what happens.
Damn,
that's the scene you're talking about.
He deserved to die.
Part two of Wreck brings in the snipers. So that's where the snipers kind of figure in, but they're not. That was one difference I remember between Wreck and Quarantine was the snipers were not utilized between in this movie. But yeah, that ending is really the only difference because otherwise your story is basically they're fucking around inside of the fire department, firehouse. They're doing a puff piece, kind of like, ha ha ha, you know, it's like, look, I'm wearing your clothes and I'm sliding down the pole and all that stuff. And then they get the call and they're, which is funny. Well, it's even funnier in quarantine because she goes down the pole twice and I'm like, are you trying to say that she's a, you know, whatever.
I'm in love with the stripper.
Yeah. But then they get the call and they're like, oh, it's just a routine thing, domestic disturbance. They're just needing the door opened. And then they get in there and then the creepy old lady is just kind of standing there shivering in the, you know, the background or whatever. Clearly foaming at the mouth in both movies. So yes. There's, you know, there's that.
They got the rabia.
And then she runs up and attacks like the first police officer that's near her. And the rest of them run downstairs with a police officer trying to get him help. And one of the firefighters stays up there. Immediately afterward, he falls down, hits his head, and then it just goes to shit from there because the plastic sheets come down over the building. They get told by the outside that they can't leave, and there's nobody coming in to help the people who were hurt. And it's when the little girl becomes infected that all shit hits the fan, because as soon as she gets infected, like, I mean, there's people crawling under gates. It's just chaos, which is really well done too, because you have no idea where they're coming from at any given time.
Yeah. What was the plan by locking them in the building? Were they going to fumigate it?
They thought that if they contained it within inside the building, or at least on appearance, that's what it is. Part two retcons it a little bit and then says that the Vatican was the one that actually sealed it off so that they could go in there and extract the blood sample from the original girl, because they were still working on the vaccine, but the guy was dead who was originally doing it. So they needed a pure blood sample. That's the whole reason that they wanted it sealed off, was just to retrieve the blood sample, according to Rec 2. But if you just follow these movies by themselves, they were sealing it off so that the stuff inside couldn't get out. Now, the thing that I don't understand is if even the rats are infected in quarantine, which I know that's discussing that movie, how did they ever, and everybody keeps saying there's access to the sewer somewhere in the building. And they actually show that in Rec 2, which I've appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Why the fuck did they think that they could contain that when rats were involved, because they could get down the sewers and just spread it anywhere?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like there was a solid plan.
If they thought it was super rabies and the rats got infected, you're fucked. I mean, they're going to spread it. I mean, I don't see how they could have, I mean, outside of torching the building, but they do everything but that because they're afraid if they try to set fire to the building that some of the people will get out, I think, in the chaos. So I don't know.
But they're not, that still doesn't explain that rats can, oh my
it's
God. Not,
it's there. There's no help for it. Believe me. If the rats can be fed. Now this movie has a little bit better explanation because they don't actually, outside of the dog, they don't actually show any other creature that gets infected, you know? Which they don't even show the dog in this. They talk about the dog that had to be put down.
I'm trying to remember. The dog obviously attacks someone in this film. Was there one also in the other film that attacks somebody?
It's in quarantine that there's a dog that actually attacks somebody elevator. I don't remember a dog attacking anybody in this movie.
Oh my God. I swear to God, I'm mixing these up so bad. This is what happens.
Well, that's the problem because they're so similar.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But yeah, I don't remember a dog in this movie, and it would make sense why, because on their limited budget, they didn't really have the ability to have like an animal trainer on set or to make it work, because this goes in the trivia a little bit, but this movie, they didn't even give the crew like the script, except on the day that they were filming and the part they were filming, so that whatever they reacted to was totally off the cuff. That's how they want them to react. So okay. they didn't have any time to prepare. So it would have been hard to have like a dog on scene or any kind of animal, because how do you get it to do what you're supposed to do whenever, I mean, without a very well-trained dog and animal trainer to kind of keep it, because when they're all screaming and running around and stuff, the dog's going to be going ape shit.
You know? How amazing would that have been to send a dog while they were running upstairs that knows he's gonna like scare the fuck out of them, but not actually bite them?
See, it's hard to get a dog that's well trained to even do that stuff, because they talk about in movies when the dogs are supposed to be aggressive, they've really got to watch how they film it or show it, because the dog is usually 9 times out of 10 wagging its tail, which is a telltale sign that the dog's happy. It's not aggressive at all, you know.
Fuck off. Let the rabid dog be happy that he's killing people. What are we even talking about? Tell me that's not a thing.
It is a real thing that when they film a dog and it has to be aggressive, they have to hide the tail because it's wagging 9 times out of 10.
Then cut off the camera angle where his tail is fucking wagging. I don't care. If I see a rabid dog shaking his tail while he's murdering somebody, I am all for it, is what I'm saying. I don't know that people care as much as they're putting into it. Maybe that'll affect it for some people. I don't know.
People, because I personally would notice after a certain, if I watched the movie a bunch, I'd be like, why is its tail not like straight out or, you know,
because he likes killing people. You're telling me you can't accept that? You're telling me that
there is no time that a dog ever attacks anybody that's wagging its tail. Like, it never does that.
That, you know what? That reminds me, because both of my dogs have a command. They speak, what language does Drogo speak in Game of Thrones?
It's not Dothraki. Or whatever, is that?
They speak Dothraki. I taught them one word. And if I say it, and I just say it, I could say it quietly, and they'll give a very quiet bark. And if I say it out loud, they will start barking, but they won't attack. But if I say it and point, they will attack. So I have to be very careful how I use this word. But, like, can I? I feel like if I could teach my dogs simple commands like that in a completely different non-existent language, you can teach a motherfucking dog to chase people up the stairs and not wag its tail. How about you just cut its tail off? What about those dogs with no tails?
Well, that's the one way you can get by with it, is if you have like a, you know, but even then, even if it has a stub, if somebody really wanted to pay attention, they can see that stub just wagging back and forth.
Oh, God.
Dogs are better than us. They are. When they're happy, they show it. Like, they're not like us and can lie about being happy and then go out and like do massive amounts of destruction.
Oh my God, this is such a tangent, but I love it. I'm sorry, everyone, but this look at the Spanish tangent had to happen, and now the dog tangent has to happen. And I swear I saw a dog jump out in the first one, but I could be crazy, and I am. So
I don't remember it, but again, these movies blend together.
It is what it is. I'm actually going on to Wikipedia to see if it's in the notes. But anyways, let's continue. Let's move on.
I don't know if there's anything else to say about the story. I mean, it's just pure chaos. It's until the ending that it really changes anyways. I mean, it's the same movie. Acting-wise, I feel like everybody did great in this movie. I mean, especially none of these were regular actors. Like, they really went out and got, like, no-name people so that they would, A, not have any kind of, like, you know, especially in Spain, like, people say, oh, that's so-and-so, you know. They didn't want any of that. And they got people who could not only they got people who were really good at improv, and it took them forever to hire them. So, but they wanted people who on the day, in the moment, could just, you know, bounce off whatever was being thrown at them and come up, you know, basically ad lib and get through the movie, which makes sense to me.
Yeah. So I have confirmed there was not a dog in the first one. I mean, there was, but he just wasn't on screen.
He was never mentioned, or he was mentioned,
yes,
but he was never shown.
Yeah. He was heard, not seen.
Just like that husband who was outside and nobody ever, but funny thing is, Rec 2 shows the husband that they keep that the little girl's mom keeps talking about. My husband's outside, you know, that bitch or whatever. Yeah. He's actually outside, and he's asking to go in, and they won't let him inside. And he's one of the other people who sneaks into the building through the sewers and then ends up getting killed anyways.
I mean, I feel like my husband would just be like, she's fucking crazy, and I'm sick of it. And she's extra crazy now, and I just can't.
But yeah, it's, that's why I love Rec 2, because it shows you everything, like the stuff that's happening outside of the building even, you know?
Okay. And that is a perspective that we're not getting a ton of. I feel like you get a little bit more in Quarantine. Just a tiny bit more though, not a shit ton more. I feel like this movie is really just the inside story. So it is kind of cool that they have a second part that really gives you the outside perspective.
Yeah, it gives you the full, I mean, perspective of everything that's going on. And then it makes both movies better because of it.
Okay. And I respect the fuck out of that.
Music, there's no music to be spoke of, yeah. So we can't review that.
No. Visuals, I want to go back to the visuals real quick because I just want to mention there is one thing that did bother me. So this is definitely a lights out kind of movie. And I don't mean like in your house. Well, yeah, in your house too. But I mean, inside the film, you want as little light as possible so you're not showing as much. But they did have the lights on when they were going down the stairs with the first guy that got bit. One of the firefighters is who got bit. Yeah. And the blood was not blooding. It was all over the place, but it didn't look like blood.
I will say that, and because they had a bigger budget and they, you know, learned from whatever mistakes they made in this. Wreck 2 is way better than that. The visuals are better as far as like what you can see. Mm-hmm. And the zombies are way scarier in that movie because the way they're filming it, it's like a better wide angled camera that's always on like a GoPro on like one of the soldiers. And it gets way more of the image and like it's better lit, especially because when they go in, there's a lot of scenes where the helicopters are shining lights down the stairwell and stuff from above.
Yeah.
And so they're even seeing like more than like, you know, a lot of the other, and actually light factors into the second movie because, the only reason they hint that this basically they retcon it and say the only reason that Angela and the cameraman Pablo in this movie met up with the weird, creepy woman was because all the lights were out and their camera lights stopped working because she is in a room that can only be accessed if you see it without light, basically. So their night vision allowed them to open up a door that's not actually there.
Oh.
If you're looking at it visually, it's all metaphysical, and that's how they came across her.
Yeah, because she was in the attic.
She's in a room that doesn't exist in the penthouse, technically. It's a weird demonic supernatural thing. They give a line for it. The priest in the second movie says they capture one of the zombies that are infected, and it says it says something like a prison of darkness. You can't see with your own eyes, and that's why. And then whenever they mention to or Angela's there at that time, and they say, how did you see anything in there? And she said the night vision. And that's when they realized that the only way they can find where the actual creepy woman's at is by turning off all the lights, looking through the night vision and using it to access a door that doesn't exist in the lit world. It's like outside reality.
Does basically. The door exist outside of that penthouse?
Technically it does not.
Okay.
Because they get to it when they first start up in Wreck 2. I know I'm getting into that, and we'll discuss it when we go back to this movie.
Guys, this has to happen. If you want to tune out because you don't want to hear more about Wreck 2, we're going to discuss that. I guess you could, but yeah, we're not done.
when the soldiers get in the building, they go straight up to the penthouse. They don't even fuck around on the bottom floors. Okay. One of them even makes a comment. He's like, shouldn't we secure the bottom? And the priest, who doesn't reveal he's the priest yet, is like, no, our mission's at the penthouse. Go straight there. So they go up there.
Do they have to kill people on the way to it? Because there was a ton of fucking zombies on the...
The zombies are miraculously nowhere to be found when they first get in there, except for maybe one or two, if that. And it's only when they get up into the penthouse that they start having problems.
Which would make sense because I would feel like if they are possessed, they are supposed to be protecting that.
Yeah.
That might not be the story. That's just what I'm conjuring up in my head.
It's something similar to that whenever they start fucking around. But anyways, when they get up there when they get up there, it's fully lit because they've got all their lights on and everything. Yeah. And they can't find shit. They go down this one like hallway that ends in like a wall, and it's got some shit on the walls about like, you know, the possessed girl and all that from the first movie.
Yes.
But that's it. There's literally nothing there. But when they go back up there later with Angela and they turn the lights off with a night vision camera, the end of that hallway, which was a wall, a solid wall, is now a door with a handle that they can pull open.
Okay. But to clarify, part two is where they saw Angela, is where we see Angela had gotten possessed. Is Angela possessed in part two?
When she first pops up, you don't think anything's wrong with her.
Oh, well, yes, correct. But she's not showing it.
She doesn't show it until the very end of the movie, and then she reveals that because the priest to get out of the building has a voice recognition thing that, and when his mission's done, he basically sends him the code. I'm ready. Extract me. She, because she's possessed, can mimic his voice.
Oh, son of a bitch.
And she tells him, she's like, I would prefer it if you would have done this on your own volition, but since you've decided not to do that, I will do it for you. And then she gets on the comm while he's like, you know, after she kills him or whatever, and then calls in his voice, extract me. There will be a girl here with me. I'm going to stay in the building because I'm infected. Just take her.
And that's how the movie ends. Son of a bitch. Major spoils. I fucking love it. I'm still going to watch it.
It's great. Really great. But anyways, regarding this movie, it's the lighting, you're right, is like, it's not, I mean, it, when they do show it, it probably shows too much for what budget they had.
Okay. So, I mean, it is what it is, but everything still, in my opinion, looks good. I don't have any complaints. Yes. Did Quarantine look a smidge better? Yeah. Because it was made to, if you think about it, it was made to be better than this one.
And it was made on a much bigger budget, yes. If I remember. We'll get to that, but it was. So, trivia. Made and shot in real locations. No sets were built to make this movie. So that's a real building that they, you know, and you can actually, I think you can actually go visit it. A lot of people actually go there just to, you know, say, I'm in the building where, you know, this took place. The actors were never given a script, like I said, so they never knew which one of them was going to die on a particular day.
I love that.
They were just supposed to react, and they were told on the day, they were like, okay, the CDC's coming in, you're freaking out, go, you know, and that's basically how they filmed the movie.
Okay.
Manuela Velasco, as I said, is a real TV presenter in her native Spain, so that was smart of them to get an actual, and she does a damn good job for somebody who's not a real actor. Mm-mm. Like, I mean,
even her mess-ups at the beginning.
Yeah, it's like when she's reacting, like freaking out and stuff, that seems like, you know, natural, like she's, you know, doing a good job with it. It's filmed chronologically, and so was Quarantine, meaning they filmed each scene in order, like, which made sense for this movie why they had to, because if they're doing it on the day, you can't necessarily jump ahead and say, okay, Pablo's dead, you film this scene, you know, they can't do that. They've like, got to film it in order.
No, that makes so much sense. And I would have to say, I think I might speak for both of us, this is one of our favorite ways of seeing things filmed. It's so rare. What?
It makes sense. I know why they don't do it, because they've got everything planned. They've got, like, you know, they've only got access to certain locations for so many days. And so they try to get those knocked out when they're cheapest, but it just makes sense to me. It's like, you like, it's so hard, and like, good actors can do this. But like, when we talked about, Rosemary's Baby, they literally had, the main actress, and I'm blanking on her name. She had to film the end scenes of the movie, at the very first of the movie. So she didn't know the journey that her character went through, and she had to put her mind in that and react. And she did a great job of it, but it would seem better to me. You go through the movie and it's like, okay, I know this character's been through shit. I know how they would react now, you know, at this particular time.
Mia Farrow, is that who you're talking about?
Mia Farrow, yeah, that's the one. When it came to casting, the directors deliberately chose actors who were not familiar to make it more realistic, and ones that were good at improvisation, like I said.
That's insane.
One of the major inspirations for the first-person survival horror game Outlast was this movie. The game explores lines between science and religion, like Wreck did. With the medical science, viruses, and possession, the POV in the game is also inspired by the shaky cam that's used in this movie. Mm-hmm. Directors Juame Beligaro and Paco Plaza, however that's said, made a deal prior to shooting in which one of them pitched an idea, and if the other one didn't like it, the idea would be tossed out without further explanation. So I guess that's a good way to, you know, kind of shoot down shitty movies without really, you know, getting too defensive over it. It's like, okay, what about, you know, zombies in a carnival? Nope. Throw it out. both the directors had no interest in sequels for this film from the beginning. It's unexpected success what drove them. And that makes Wreck 2 so much better, because it seems like it it was written with the anticipation of being a movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like the fact they went back and retconned and they did such a good retcon on it, it just blows my mind.
Yeah.
The DVD for this film wasn't released in the U.S. until after Quarantine had been out in theaters and the sequel, Wreck 2, had been confirmed. The directors originally toyed with the idea of having the TV camera crew shadow some policemen, but they decided to go with firemen because after 9/11, firemen were more popular and people were all like, you know, Popo's going to, you know, that everybody's always got issues with police.
Well, one way or the other. It makes sense because they go in with, this might be Quarantine, but they go in with the firemen, they go in with the policemen, and it's the policeman that fires first. Obviously, mostly firemen don't have guns, so.
Yeah.
I think it's good that it kind of follows the firemen because, like, okay, they're going to help us. And firemen have access. Fire department has access to every fucking building. Every fucking building ever. They'll make access to your home. But any kind of commercial building, they have access.
They have tools specifically designed for entry. I mean,
exactly.
For whatever they need to do.
So it makes sense for that. And it's like, okay, cool, friendly. But then when you need protection, you got the police. And I think they utilize that very well in these films. There was an asshole police officer, but that's gonna happen.
It was a good contrast. You had like the noble fireman who sacrificed himself for the two camera people to get upstairs, and then you had like the policeman who was like, he was like, well, they said to do this, so get your asses down here because I'm following orders. And then when he realized that he was also part of those orders, that's when he started like freaking the fuck out. Yeah. And they're like, okay, this is not cool.
Yeah.
The working title, a non-canonical teaser trailer features fireman Manu and Alex meeting and seemingly taking the infected Jennifer out of the building. This was originally set to be released direct to video, but then they put it in the theater and it blew up.
Hell yeah.
The working titles were Bombers, which is firemen in, you know, in Spain, Origin, and basically length 70 minutes, because I guess that's how long the movie is. Wreck is a way better title than all that shit.
Duration, but I'm not gonna lie, I do kind of like Duration a little bit. I do like Origin, but it's a little too,
they got the Origin back anyways by doing Genesis.
True.
You can't get it, I mean. And Genesis makes way more sense when you realize it's, you know, religious.
Okay.
You know?
That is better. And I don't know. I guess Wreck just does make more sense because you're recording. Like, I get it, you know. But the Duración does go very well.
It was revisited in the documentary Wreck, Terrorists and Pasa, and adapted as an immersive stage performance in celebration of its 15th anniversary. Angela and Pablo's show is reminiscent of an actual Spanish show called Equipo, which has been done over a couple of different times, which does kind of similar things. They kind of follow, you know, people around that have like overnight jobs and stuff like that.
That's kind of cool. Terror Without Pause, though, that's kind of revisit in the documentary Terror Without Pause. That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, it's a good title.
Yeah.
And this was released within 6 months of the similarly themed Zombie Diaries from 2006. Mm-hmm. And, of course, George A. Romero's Diary of the Dead in 2007.
Within 6 months, Zombie Diaries. Zombie Diaries, was that similar to Diary of the Dead? I know that sounds so stupid for me asking.
I don't know, to be honest.
Okay.
And nobody rates that as a good one, so... I don't know. I mean, we could try to review that with Wreck 2, but it's not one that people really throw out there as a good one.
Oh, my God.
Review of this movie. If I hadn't watched Quarantine, I'm still going to give it a 4. But if I hadn't watched Quarantine, this movie would have been, like, the best thing ever. Because Wreck 2 really impressed the fuck out of me. So it hurt it because, like, when I could really get into the moments in Quarantine, because I could understand what they were saying and not have to worry about what they were saying, I could just listen and kind of watch. That one was a little bit better for me just because the horror came out more in the movie. Like this one, whenever I was really getting into something, I'm like, oh shit, what'd they just say? You know, like it pulled me out a little bit.
It's
so
hard.
But anyways, I give it a 4. I think it's a good movie, and people probably say I should probably, there's probably a lot of people out there think that it should probably be rated higher, but I think Wreck 2 bumps up both of them in the long run. And so I think that four is a pretty good place for that.
Well, then you might be surprised. You say people think you should rate it higher. I'm actually rating it like a 3.5. I really should rate it a 3.8 because it's good. I got one really good scream out of this one. God, I'm trying to think of what caused the scream to it. It wasn't the skinny girl.
That would creep me the fuck out because I was used to like Doug Jones and as the guy in the new in Quarantine. And when I saw the lady, I'm like, oh shit, what the fuck is this thing? That's straight out of Resident Evil, the games, not the movies, but like it was something out of that, you know, like Resident Evil, the village. It looked like something out of that.
Yeah, it is creepy as hell. I don't know. That didn't get me as bad. But I liked the religious aspect of it. And of course, in this movie, just like Quarantine, the jump scares are really good. So this is a really, really good film. It's just, it's funny because I feel like I like this explanation ending better than I like Quarantine. But I like the visuals of Quarantine more than I like this one. And that's not fair because it's a year difference between the films.
And budgets.
Yes, and major budget too, exactly. So that's a tough one for me. We'll leave it at a 3.8. It's almost a 4. That's just it for me. And I do consider right now in this film and this film alone, I consider them zombies.
There's zombies in the second movie. I'm going to straight up say it, even if they are demonically possessed zombies, because that is a branch of zombies that's out there. It's not like, Ween Evil Lurks is that type of zombie.
I don't like weenie worm zombies. I'm not buying
it. But they're not, the only worm is Angela. That's okay. Literally it.
And Angela is not a zombie.
She's technically not, because she is the demon. Like, it somehow made itself manifest into her.
People becoming a zombie because of an enzyme that entered their bloodstream when they got bit. Zombie. That is a zombie. That's why I really liked that explanation.
And it's the same thing throughout the rest of the movie. Yes. So it still works.
Okay. But I have not seen the other movies. But yes, for sure, these are zombies. I'm accepting these as zombies. Because I have to clarify this, because we have watched some zombie films that are not zombie films.
I still think if you're shambling, your brain's involved. I mean, it's zombie related or adjacent.
Oh God.
All right, folks. We'll be back with Quarantine, which will probably be a shorter discussion because we basically discussed it in this episode, but you had to.
Yeah,
you had to.
We
That's
had to
all
go
you
there.
Do. Anyways, with that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.